Chapter 73. The word of a gentleman, when Mr. and Mrs. Flintwinch panted up to the door of the old house in the twilight, Jeremiah within a second of aphory, the stranger started back. Death of my soul! Apostrophe, he exclaimed. Why, how did you get here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch, to whom these words were spoken, repaid the stranger's wonder in full. He gazed at him with blank astonishment. He looked over his own shoulder, as expecting to see someone he had not been aware of standing behind him. He gazed at the stranger again, speechlessly, at a loss to know what he meant. He looked to his wife for explanation. Receiving none, he pounced upon her, and shook her with such heartiness, that he shook her cap off her head, saying between his teeth, with grim raillery, as he did it, "Aphory, my woman, you must have a dose, my woman. This is some of your tricks. You have been dreaming again, mistress. What's it about? Who is it? What does it mean? Speak out or be choked. It's the only choice I'll give you." Apostrophe, supposing Mistress Aphory to have any power of election at the moment, her choice was decidedly to be choked, for she answered not a syllable to this adjuration, but, with her bare head wagging violently backwards and forwards, resigned herself to her punishment. The stranger, however, picking up her cap with an air of gallantry, interposed. "Permit me, apostrophe," said he, laying his hand on the shoulder of Jeremiah, who stopped and released his victim. "Thank you. Excuse me. Husband and wife I know, from this playfulness. Ha ha. Always agreeable to see that relation playfully maintained. Listen. May I suggest that somebody upstairs, in the dark, is becoming energetically curious to know what is going on here?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, this reference to Mrs. Clennam's voice reminded Mr. Flintwinch to step into the hall and call up the staircase. "It's all right, I am here, Aphory is coming with your light." Apostrophe, then he said to the latter flustered woman, who was putting her cap on, "Get out with you, and get upstairs." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and then turned to the stranger and said to him, "Now, sir, what might you please to want?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "I am afraid, apostrophe," said the stranger, "I must be so troublesome as to propose a candle." Apostrophe, "True, apostrophe," assented Jeremiah. "I was going to do so. Please to stand where you are while I get one." Apostrophe, the visitor was standing in the doorway, but turned a little into the gloom of the house as Mr. Flintwinch turned, and pursued him with his eyes into the little room, where he groped about for a phosphorus box. When he found it, it was damp, or otherwise out of order, and match after match that he struck into it lighted sufficiently to throw a dull glare about his groping face, and to sprinkle his hands with pale little spots of fire, but not sufficiently to light the candle. The stranger, taking advantage of this fitful illumination of his visage, looked intently and wonderingly at him. Jeremiah, when he at last lighted the candle, knew he had been doing this by seeing the last shade of a lowering watchfulness clear away from his face, as it broke into the doubtful smile that was a large ingredient in its expression. "Be so good, apostrophe," said Jeremiah, closing the house door, and taking a pretty sharp survey of the smiling visitor in his turn, "as to step into my counting house. It's all right, I tell you." Apostrophe, petulantly breaking off to answer the voice upstairs, still unsatisfied, though Aphory was there, speaking in persuasive tones. "Don't I tell you it's all right? Preserve the woman, has she no reason at all in her?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, timorous, apostrophe, remarked the stranger. "Timorous?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Flintwinch, turning his head to retort, as he went before with the candle. "More courageous than 90 men in 100, sir, let me tell you. Apostrophe, though an invalid? Apostrophe, apostrophe, many years an invalid. Mrs. Clennam, the only one of that name left in the house now. My partner, apostrophe saying something apologetically as he crossed the hall, to the effect that at that time of night they were not in the habit of receiving anyone, and were always shut up. Mr. Flintwinch led the way into his own office, which presented a sufficiently businesslike appearance. Here he put the light on his desk, and said to the stranger, with his wryest twist upon him, "Your commands." Apostrophe, my name is Blandois. Apostrophe, Blandois. I don't know it, apostrophe said Jeremiah. I thought it possible, apostrophe resumed the other, that you might have been advised from Paris, apostrophe. We have had no advice from Paris respecting anybody of the name of Blandois, apostrophe said Jeremiah. No? Apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, Jeremiah stood in his favorite attitude. The smiling Mr. Blandois, opening his cloak to get his hand to a breast pocket, paused to say, with a laugh in his glittering eyes, which it occurred to Mr. Flintwinch, were too near together. You are so like a friend of mine. Not so identically the same as I supposed when I really did for the moment take you to be the same in the dusk for which I ought to apologize. Permit me to do so. A readiness to confess my errors is, I hope, a part of the frankness of my character still, however, uncommonly like. Apostrophe, indeed? Apostrophe, said Jeremiah, perversely. But I have not received any letter of advice from anywhere respecting anybody of the name of Blandois. Apostrophe, just so, apostrophe, said the stranger. Just so, apostrophe, said Jeremiah. Mr. Blandois, not at all put out by this omission on the part of the correspondents of the House of Clennam & Company, took his pocketbook from his breast pocket, selected a letter from that receptacle, and handed it to Mr. Flintwinch. No doubt you are well acquainted with the writing. Perhaps the letter speaks for itself, and requires no advice. You are a far more competent judge of such affairs than I am. It is my misfortune to be, not so much a man of business, as what the world calls arbitrarily, a gentleman. Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch took the letter, and read, under date of Paris, we have to present to you, on behalf of a highly esteemed correspondent of our firm, M. Blandois, of this city, apostrophe and see such facilities as he may require, and such attentions as may lie in your power, apostrophe and see also have to add that, if you will honor M. Blandois's drafts at sight to the extent of, say £50 sterling L50, apostrophe and see, very good, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch. Take a chair. To the extent of anything that our house can do, we are in a retired, old-fashioned, steady way of business, sir, we shall be happy to render you our best assistance. I observe, from the date of this, that we could not yet be advised of it. Probably you came over with the delayed mail, that brings the advice. Apostrophe, that I came over with the delayed mail, sir, apostrophe returned Mr. Blandois, passing his white hand down his high hooked nose, I know to the cost of my head and stomach. The detestable and intolerable weather having racked them both. You see me in the plight in which I came out of the packet within this half hour. I ought to have been here hours ago, and then I should not have to apologize. Permit me to apologize for presenting myself so unreasonably, and frightening. No, by the by, you said not frightening. Permit me to apologize again to the esteemed lady, Mrs. Clennam, in her invalid chamber above stairs. Apostrophe, swagger and an air of authorized condescension do so much, that Mr. Flintwinch had already begun to think this a highly gentlemanly personage. Not the less unyielding with him on that account, he scraped his chin and said, what could he have the honor of doing for Mr. Blandois tonight, out of business hours? Faith. Apostrophe returned that gentleman, shrugging his cloaked shoulders, I must change, and eat and drink, and be lodged somewhere. Have the kindness to advise me, a total stranger, where, and money is a matter of perfect indifference until tomorrow. The nearer the place, the better. Next door, if that's all. Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch was slowly beginning, for a gentleman of your habits, there is not in this immediate neighborhood any hotel apostrophe, when Mr. Blandois took him up. So much for my habits, my dear sir, apostrophe snapping his fingers. A citizen of the world has no habits. That I am, in my poor way, a gentleman, by heaven. I will not deny, but I have no unaccommodating prejudiced habits. A clean room, a hot dish for dinner, and a bottle of not absolutely poisonous wine, are all I want tonight. But I want that much without the trouble of going one unnecessary inch to get it. Apostrophe, there is, apostrophe, said Mr. Flintwinch, with more than his usual deliberation, as he met, for a moment, Mr. Blandois's shining eyes, which were restless. There is a coffee house and tavern close here, which, so far, I can recommend. But there's no style about it. Apostrophe, I dispense with style. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Blandois, waving his hand. Do me the honor to show me the house, and introduce me there if I am not too troublesome, and I shall be infinitely obliged. Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch, upon this, looked up his hat, and lighted Mr. Blandois across the hall again. As he put the candle on a bracket, where the dark old paneling almost served as an extinguisher for it, he bethought himself of going up to tell the invalid that he would not be absent 5 minutes. Oblige me, apostrophe, said the visitor, on his saying so, by presenting my card of visit. Do me the favor to add, that I shall be happy to wait on Mrs. Clennam, to offer my personal compliments, and to apologize for having occasioned any agitation in this tranquil corner, if it should suit her convenience, to endure the presence of a stranger for a few minutes, after he shall have changed his wet clothes, and fortified himself with something to eat and drink. Apostrophe, Jeremiah made all dispatch, and said, on his return, she'll be glad to see you, sir, but, being conscious that her sick room has no attractions, wishes me to say that she won't hold you to your offer, in case you should think better of it. Apostrophe, to think better of it, apostrophe, returned the gallant Blandois, would be to slight a lady would be, to be deficient in chivalry towards the sex. And chivalry towards the sex is a part of my character. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thus expressing himself, he threw the draggled skirt of his cloak over his shoulder, and accompanied Mr. Flintwinch to the tavern, taking upon the road a porter who was waiting with his portmanteau on the outer side of the gateway. The house was kept in a homely manner, and the condescension of Mr. Blandois was infinite. It seemed to fill to inconvenience the little bar in which the widow landlady and her two daughters received him. It was much too big for the narrow wainscoted room with a bagatelle board in it that was first proposed for his reception. It perfectly swamped the little private holiday sitting room of the family, which was finally given up to him. Here, in dry clothes and scented linen, with sleeked hair, a great ring on each forefinger, and a massive show of watch chain, Mr. Blandois, waiting for his dinner, lolling on a window seat with his knees drawn up, looked, for all the difference in the setting of the jewel, fearfully and wonderfully like a certain Monsieur Rigaud who had once, so waited for his breakfast, lying on the stone ledge of the iron grating of a cell in a villainous dungeon at Marseilles. His greed at dinner, too, was closely in keeping with the greed of Monsieur Rigaud at breakfast. His avaricious manner of collecting all the eatables about him, and devouring some with his eyes, while devouring others with his jaws, was the same manner. His utter disregard of other people, as shown in his way of tossing the little womanly toys of furniture about, flinging favorite cushions under his boots for a softer rest, and crushing delicate coverings with his big body and his great black head, had the same brute selfishness at the bottom of it. The softly moving hands that were so busy among the dishes, had the old wicked facility of the hands that had clung to the bars. And when he could eat no more, and sat sucking his delicate fingers one by one and wiping them on a cloth, there wanted nothing but the substitution of vine leaves to finish the picture. on this man, with his mustache going up and his nose coming down in that most evil of smiles, and with his surface eyes looking as if they belonged to his dyed hair, and that had their natural power of reflecting light stopped by some similar process, nature, always true, and never working in vain, had set the mark, beware. It was not her fault, if the warning were fruitless. She is never to blame in any such instance. Mr. Blandois, having finished his repast, and cleaned his fingers, took a cigar from his pocket, and, lying on the window seat again, smoked it out at his leisure, occasionally apostrophizing the smoke as it parted from his thin lips in a thin stream. Blandois, you shall turn the tables on society, my little child. Ha ha! Holy blue, you have begun well, Blandois. At a pinch, an excellent master in English or French, a man for the bosom of families. You have a quick perception, you have humor, you have ease, you have insinuating manners, you have a good appearance. In effect, you are a gentleman. A gentleman you shall live, my small boy, and a gentleman you shall die. You shall win, however the game goes. They shall all confess your merit, Blandois. You shall subdue the society which has grievously wronged you, to your own high spirit. Death of my soul! You are high-spirited by right and by nature, my Blandois. Apostrophe, apostrophe, to such soothing murmurs did this gentleman smoke out his cigar and drink out his bottle of wine. Both being finished, he shook himself into a sitting attitude. And with the concluding serious apostrophe, hold then. Blandois, you ingenious one, have all your wits about you. Apostrophe, apostrophe arose and went back to the house of Clennam and Company. He was received at the door by Mistress Affery, who, under instructions from her lord, had lighted up two candles in the hall and a third on the staircase, and who conducted him to Mrs. Clennam's room. Tea was prepared there, and such little company arrangements had been made as usually attended the reception of expected visitors. They were slight on the greatest occasion, never extending beyond the production of the China tea service, and the covering of the bed with a sober and sad drapery. For the rest, there was the bier-like sofa with the block upon it, and the figure in the widow's dress, as if attired for execution. The fire topped by the mound of damp ashes, the grate with its second little mound of ashes, the kettle and the smell of black dye, all as they had been for 15 years. Mr. Flintwinch presented the gentleman commended to the consideration of Clennam and Company. Mrs. Clennam, who had the letter lying before her, bent her head, and requested him to sit. They looked very closely at one another. That was but natural curiosity. I thank you, sir, for thinking of a disabled woman like me. Few who come here on business have any remembrance to bestow on one so removed from observation. It would be idle to expect that they should have. Out of sight, out of mind. While I am grateful for the exception, I don't complain of the rule. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.